Welcome to County Conversations. This is Stephen Aquario, your executive director of the New York State Association of Counties. Today, I'm joined by the NYSAC president, the Honorable Daniel P. McCoy, and the president of the New York State County Execs Association, County Executives Association, the Honorable Steve Newhouse from Orange County. Gentlemen, welcome.
Thank you, Steve, for having us.
Thank you. Looking forward to the conversation, guys.
My pleasure, County Executives. Thank you for making time from your busy agenda. Today, we want to talk about immigration. We want to talk about what we've heard on radio stations and television stations across the United States on a fairly regular basis, certainly for the past 3 or 4 or 5 years now in New York State. We've seen a lot of national attention, a lot of local news coverage and media coverage of what's called political asylum seekers, or individuals from other countries outside the United States trying to come into the United States in various channels that they're coming through here. But what happened recently, and is the reason for this podcast or this county conversation, is there was a trip to the southern border of the United States, which included both of you, as well as county executives from Erie, Chautauqua, and Oneida County, as well as the chairman of the county legislature in northern New York and the northern border in Clinton County. So there was a trip that was organized by the National Association of Counties that took place on March 27th and 28th of 2024. This was a pretty historic trip. Let me just briefly review for our listeners what happened at this trip. So on the first day of this visit, you toured, I was with you, but we toured the United States Customs and Border Protection Office, Paso del Norte, the port of entry at Paso del Norte. Also, you visited the El Paso Station, Santa Teresa Station, and the El Paso Hardin facility. So much took place during those 5 hours or so, those visits at Border Patrol, at the customs station itself, and at the Hardin facility. I want to break this down in a little bit to have you go through the different aspects of these visits. After those tours, you then went in the afternoon to the El Paso County Migrant Support Services Center. So this was a county-based facility in El Paso who has a population of about 1 million. About 900,000 is the population of El Paso County, Texas. Following that, you then toured the Sacred Heart Catholic Church in a very poor neighborhood in El Paso, one of the poorest neighborhoods in the United States. The following day, you visited then and crossed over the border into Juarez, Mexico, Chihuahua, the state of Chihuahua in Juarez, Mexico, and visited both a safe house and also a state government operations center there to learn and about the shelters for those who are waiting to cross the U.S.-Mexican border, and also how the state of Mexico, one of the states in Mexico, is help processing these political asylum seekers. But let me stop there. I want to talk with you both. I'll start with you, Daniel, as NYSAC president, and talk about your observations of these 2 days of action, really packed visits here. Tell us what you expected to see as you went to the southern border in the state of Texas, why you went on this trip. What were your observations of these 2 days for our listeners? And then we'll go to County Executive Newhouse.
Steve, first and foremost, I want to say thank you for this opportunity and this platform. But I do want to thank New York State Association of Counties for putting this together with NACO and their National Association of County Immigration Reform Task Force. So important in the bipartisan approach from NACO and all the state associations are really leaving the politics at the side and getting to the heart of the issue. I will recommend to anyone listening to this to take the opportunity, if you have migrants in your state, your county, your town, village, your city, it's eye opener. And it really showed us, you know, some of the things I was hoping we were going to be wrong on, some of the things were eye opening, and some of the things were not so eye opening because I kind of expected it, but you hope for better. And I have to tell you, one of the approaches we looked at, you know, talking to Steve Newhouse and, you know, PJ Wendell and, you know, our dean, Tony Percenti, as always, and Mark Pullencartz, but was the fact that the left and right hand didn't know what they're doing. When we got to the U.S. Customs, it's pretty straightforward. Customs has been around a long time. As, you know, I mean, obviously the Border Patrol has been around since 1924. They just celebrated their 100-year anniversary. You know, but U.S. Customs, they got people coming over. Most are coming over, a lot of school-age kids. That's heart-wrenching when you see these kids crossing the border to go to school in the U.S. The people coming over to work, the amount of traffic, you know, and they had their issues, their smuggling and other things like that. So, you know, I just want to say that, you know, really looking at the whole operation is, you know, they need personnel. They need personnel, but it's something that takes 18 months to get online that we learned. So even if we gave them personnel, it's really not going to make a difference right away. But a coordination of effort. And, you know, Steve Newhouse and I both being in the military, you know, really got to what they were saying, to the heart of it. The building they're in wasn't set up for this mass migration, you know, and they're dealing with numbers, staggering numbers they never dealt with before. And that's been half the battle, you know, that, you know, you got people coming over, asylum seekers, people crashing the border, which we'll talk about the Border Patrol, but talking about the first trip in the morning when we visit the U.S. border and walking up that bridge with all of you, Steve, and getting to the line where the Mexican U.S. line is and really soaking it all in. And, you know, there's people that, you know, that are coming here to try to make a different life for themselves, but we have to do it in a way that's a coordinated effort across the board.
Clearly, what we saw at that customs port of entry there was at capacity. When we looked into the waiting rooms, completely full. You spoke about using an app and trying to get an appointment to come into that point of entry, taking 18 months. And we'll talk later about people that we met in Mexico that has been taking 6 months. She was at the six-month point, I think, and still waiting. But very interesting observations, Daniel, as we were in that point of
view. Steve, I do want to just say one thing, and I just to remind you what we talked about, all of us on the border. Yes, there's 1,200 slots across the Texas border. But for El Paso, they only allowed 200 spots. And remember, we said, hey, this reminds me of COVID, when then Governor Cuomo had that, you know, that app you had to go on, you had to register to get a slot, to get a vaccine, and you weren't guaranteed here in Albany. Some people had to go travel up north, down New York City, out west. And then you got seniors that didn't understand the app or people that couldn't figure it out. And we had to figure that out. And it reminds me, like, foreigners coming here trying to get 200 slots, and the people we met in Chihuahua that have been waiting 8 months to get a spot or trying to figure out how to get on the app every day to just try to get one of them slots. Heartbreaking.
Yeah. Having to find a computer, having to use a cell phone and navigate what is an app, how to open up an app. And Daniel, you're absolutely right. I remember back in COVID just how hard it was to get that appointment for a vaccination or a testing ability to get tested, but certainly the vaccination, it was a debacle. So this is a debacle much, much larger than this COVID. This is a national issue. Let's go to County Executive Newhouse. Steve, we talked a bit about day one and day two. So the day one being at the Customs and Border Patrol Paso del Norte, the point of entry there, the wall itself, Santa Teresa Station, the wall there, El Paso Hardened Facility later that day. What were your observations about what you saw? And talk to us about what you may have expected to see when you were going down there. Was there some experience there or a conversation that was particularly impactful to you?
So again, sharing what Dan started with Steve Aquario, thank you for putting this on. And I am appreciative to have gone on this trip. I know a lot of us went back and forth. Do we really need to be there? We've seen this all over the news. But it was probably one of the best things I think any of us could have done. And we all agreed on this when we did a hot wash after the trip. So the similar observations I had to Dan, I think there were some good things. I think that, you know, there was some, we saw a lot of compassion. You know, the El Paso County was doing what they have to do. They have thousands of people showing up on their doorstep every day. So they were getting them processed and getting them where they need to go or where they intended to be. The what I call the receiving center, which is like a refugee center. This is where people just crossed over the border and were captured or caught by the border patrol. They get processed in a pretty clean facility. They get inoculations if they need them. They get their pictures. They get fingerprinted for all that stuff for biometrics. So there are a lot of good things happening to these individuals. They're human beings. Ultimately, if you ask me what I saw a major national security risk, but I also saw a humanitarian crisis, and I also saw some real kindness and generosity on behalf of the American and the American governments. So I think that, you know, talking to, you said like one of some of the conversations, there are two conversations that stick to my mind. One is County Exec McCoy and I were walking along the border, the actual fence itself, and the Border Patrol said, look, guys, we got to get out of here by dark because at dark and during the entire evening, the cartels own the border wall. That was shocking to me. I thought you have a border wall and it's up and some of these people are breaking through little spots. No, the actual border wall, they're actually climbing over and getting thousands of people through. As a matter of fact, in the one spot that we were at on the New Mexican border with Juarez, 34,000 people have crossed illegally that we have zero, the Border Patrol, the federal government has zero accountability for. That's just since October in this one section you're at. Now, that's a national security crisis. They can't get any worse than this. It's coming from people that are from the state where 9/11 happened predominantly with the World Trade Center. I know we had the Pentagon in Shanksville, PA, but this is where September 11th happened in New York City, in New York State. It concerns us. You got Dan and I, both national security guys, military guys. That's an issue. Then going to the compassion area, we go to a church where these folks are now going to be sent around the country, and we're meeting with kids. And I ask them, where do you want to go? What do you want to see? And the little kids come up to me and say they want to see the Statue of Liberty. So there is a compassion, a humanitarian, and the stories that they have from coming in their journey to the border and then possibly getting over. It was amazing. So that's some of the thoughts that came to me. I would not have picked that up with a 30-minute visit like you see many politicians go to the border, meet a border patrol guy, talk to him for a minute, take a selfie and go. We spent 2 days in depth on this issue and we got what we wanted from it. A lot of information.
A lot of information given by you both on that first day there, where we went to the point of entry and listened to the officers talking about what their facility was built for. And Daniel mentioned that it was not built for this. It was not built for showers. It was not built for sleeping. It was not built for the numbers that are crossing through. These are individuals who had appointments, who were able and fortunate enough to get that app appointment and then able to come through legally. And what struck me in my observation was just how polite they were and quiet and respectful as they sat there and waited to be processed into the United States. What I also learned is that when we went to the actual walls, the wall at the Santa Teresa station there, that 50 mile, was just how much that there was no quote unquote wall, or in fact, there was no areas like Sector 36 or something, I think it was called, which was just too difficult to patrol, that they don't even send Border Patrol agents to patrol there. It's too dangerous for them. especially at night. I was also uncomfortable standing there knowing that at night folks were just coming through without any consequence other than being in the United States. And what we learned is once they're in the United States, we just can't simply return them, that they're here, they're processed. Any observations about those comments, more about the wall? What was around the wall there? Was there a village? Was there schools nearby there? What was going on there? What did you see there?
So Steve Newhouse and I ventured over to the wall, and there was like a little village on the other side. And the Border Patrol agent told us to be careful because there's a guy screaming at us from the other side. And they have spotters that watch the whole border. They understand the Border Patrol's activities. They know how they patrol. They know how many people they have on, what time they pass a certain sector. And he said, I believe he said he was from part of Mexico. And he goes, if I ended up in that village, you're dead. No one's coming to get you. No one's coming to rescue you. It's run by the cartel. And they had all these cages set up, and people thought they were for farm animals, and they weren't. They're for people. And they had to store the people in there until they let them cross the border. But a couple things came to mind in that 52-mile section. The wall we were looking at, as Steve Newhouse said this earlier at a speech we were given, was by George Bush. The second fence continuation, obviously, it went on to Clinton and then Obama, then Trump. And, and they were talking about the different style fences that the Obama era put a chain link fence up. And they go, all they do is just cut it down every night. We repatch it, put it back. And he goes, and then the end of the wall. And we're like, what's the end of the wall? He goes, the fence ends, end of the wall. And we're like, oh, yeah, and that's the problem. But they talked about how during nighttime, they know how many personnel they have on the border. So they'll send 30 people over knowing that they're going to capture them. And the Border Patrol is going to make their arrest, and they're going to put them into custody. Then the other 300 down the road, a couple miles down the road, walk into the U.S. because they know they don't have the personnel. That was bothersome. And then they said at times, too, literally, the cartel comes into U.S., crosses the border, and pulls the people back into Mexico. And I'm like, well, why do they do that? Do you stop them? He goes, we can't. They know us. We don't have the personnel to go after them, and we can't obviously cross into Mexico. And the issue is they either didn't pay their cartel to walk through their district, or they didn't pay the smugglers, which is the cartel, to come over. And one of the alarming things was they said the drugs weren't really the issue anymore. It was cartels getting rich off of smuggling people into the U.S. That's where they're making their money. And again, when he talked to us about the rapists that are coming over here, the murderers that they're capturing, and there's good people too. So I'm not here to scare people listening to this. About 90% of people who are coming have a destination where they're headed. And it's a coordinating communications between various agencies that really need to break down. It's that 2% or 3% of bad actors that we have to worry about. But I do agree with Steve. One thing we did talk about, we're like, look, you have to harden the border, man. Him and I are both military people. You have to, finish the wall. You have to let people come over in a vetted, coordinated effort. So then that way, you can communicate through the things, through the different agencies. And one of the things that was alarming to me, and I hopefully Steve aren't jumping the gun on you guys, and I'll let Steve Newhouse talk in a second, was when the Border Patrol took us to their intake center. And they're spending $500 million a month on this tent city, which Steve Newhouse, I got to say, I probably haven't seen tent city that size since I've been in Iraq. And let me tell you, that place was a lot better than the tents we had in Iraq, that was set up for intake. And then they're like telling us how they vet them and the countries they work with, but all the countries they don't work with. And then you sign an affidavit saying this is who you are, but they really don't know. But the alarming thing to me was then they released them to El Paso County, which has a great intake. And we visited that. So I don't want to get ahead in the conversation, but they don't share the information. So no one's sharing the information. So El Paso County is doing the same thing the Border Patrol just did, doing it intake, you know, vaccines, background, language, where they're at, why they're there, asylum seekers, and then they ship them out for there. And I don't want to get ahead, but it was what Steve Newhouse said, that the fact that, you know, 70% of their vehicles are sidelined, their helicopters, their trucks, their equipment. These are, and I got to agree with them. If our colleagues and not just us took the time to take the visit we did, and I want to thank Matt Chase from NACO too, who put this all together, and Julie and Charlie that were with us from NACO that made it happen. And without them too, they did a great job. It was eye opener. And if we take anything away from this, let's give them the resources to do their job, protect our border, let people come here the right way, not just walking into our country and not have accountability.
When someone is coming across the border, Daniel, what you've described, let me break it down a bit, and then we'll turn it over to County Executive Newhouse so he can talk about that hardening facility. So an individual is in the United States, illegally apprehended, arrested. That person is arrested and taken then in handcuffs to this hardening facility. And then, as you mentioned, this is an intake facility, cost $1 million a day, $1.2 million a day to operate this. It's a massive tent city. Steve, County Executive Newhouse, let's go to you now about what happens in that facility. What were your observations at that facility? And why New York? Why are people who are coming across the border, how, when they go through this facility, why is New York the destination for them? So describe what you saw at that hardening facility, and then why New York State?
So I talked about it a little bit before. That facility is really where people are captured at the border. The ones that aren't captured are what they called gotaways. Nobody knows what happens to them and where their, you know, where their final destination in the United States is. But the ones that do get apprehended are brought to this facility, most of them in zip ties, like shackles to most folks. Then there's also a lot of children with them. So we saw a mixture of them. They're all waving to us. They look scared. We were, all three of us were very moved by watching them, because they're kind of sitting in like a cattle in certain areas waiting for their number to be called. They get a shower, they get a meal, they get new clothes, and they get, shoes and everything. But then they're sent to, you know, they are given a appearance ticket, basically, that they have to appear before a federal judge because they broke the law. They came with the United States. Majority of them are sent to the Northeast or to liberal-leaning states like Chicago and Denver. We had a representative from Denver with us. Reason being is that a conservative federal judge is likely to deport these individuals. So they go to these left-leaning areas because they are less likely to be deported. It makes sense. They've obviously traveled far and wide to get here. They got over the border, and now they're here. The last thing they want to do is be deported. So that's really why we're seeing this massive influx in some of the areas, in particular New York State, because they are allowed to stay here and they're given their pathway to citizenship. So that's really what kind of made sense to us. You know, Dan mentioned about the miscommunication. I have 100 individuals living in Orange County that were sent up here from New York City. I don't even have names, date of births. The basic stuff hasn't been shared.
Well, let's talk about that. Let's talk about that for a minute. What did you see there or hear from these federal officials or other agencies that these non-governmental organizations or NGOs? Is there coordination between the agencies? Are other countries communicating criminal history records with the United States? What did we learn about that?
So unfortunately, the United States does not have diplomatic relationships with majority of the countries that these people are coming from.
Meaning what? Meaning we don't know who these people are?
So if they are a murderer in Venezuela and they come to the border, we have no relationship with that government. They're just a regular guy or a regular gal, and they do get a photograph, they do get their fingerprints, but they're let in, and they're given that notice that they have to appear before a federal judge at some time. By the way, some of those individuals had dates as far out as 2028. So all these things are red flags to people like Dan McCoy, myself. So they, and by the way, in addition to that, the Border Patrol did tell us on a regular basis, almost daily basis, they're capturing rapists, murderers, some that were escaped from the United States, some from foreign countries. And then they also have a person, they say people of special interest to the United States. These are people that are coming from Russia, from China. So these are very big issues to us. Are they asking for asylum? They mentioned there were some Russian soldiers that actually had fled and were abandoning the Russian country. Those people need to be vetted. So how about the people of the 34,000, if some of them were from some of these countries of interest, or maybe have a murder or rape conviction? We don't need them walking around the United States freely.
What about, why does New York care about this? Why do New York County officials care about the southern border?
So, Steve, to that point, and it was interesting. Albany County, we have a population roughly about 320,000 residents. Yet I have 900 immigrants living here, which we're open and we're doing our job. But we have the most amount of immigrants outside New York City. So to me, when people ask me why I went, what's the breakdown of coordination? Like, I can set a blueprint now for my county, how to handle this, how to do it correctly, how it's not draining on your resources, as long as the state and New York City continue to pay for it, right? And how we can take care of it. But we also have to take care of our people here in the United States, first and foremost. The people living in our shelters, on our streets. After COVID-19, we got a mental health issue, opiate addiction issues going on, relapse in alcohol, and more homeless people than we ever had before, and children, mental health issues with children and adults more than we've ever had before. So we need to address some issues too. So I want to make that very, very clear. And we talked about that extensively on the strip with our NYSAC representatives and other people, but it's a coordination effort. And one thing I learned is that Louisiana, Steve, if I stand corrected, and you can tell me, has boots on the ground. They have someone there talking. Denver was sending someone next to
Illinois. Chicago was the one.
Yeah.
Who sent something up there. Yeah.
Yep. And what was alarming to me is, why doesn't New York State have someone from the state, New York State government, or New York City have someone on the ground? Because when we went to the intake center in El Paso, to the two Steves, if you remember, on the wall was a clock for Los Angeles, New York, and Chicago, right? Nowhere else. And they come here, and remember that one couple we met? They want to go to Tennessee. And like I said, 90% of these people have a destination in mind. They know where they're going. They got family connections, friends, whatever it might be. They want to go. And they couldn't afford the bus ticket. So they said, go to New York, pass Tennessee, go to New York, and then they'll provide you a free ticket to Tennessee. That is the most craziest thing to me in the world, when I'm watching people being forced to places they don't want to go, so they get a free ride from them states, so they don't have to pay. And El Paso had it down to a science. They were shipping out 1,200 people every 3 days. Every 3 days, 1,200. And they said very rarely someone stays there for 30 days. They ship them out quickly and move them efficiently. The other thing I learned was FEMA. Why is FEMA paying for their intake center, but they're not anywhere else? How come they're not paying Los Angeles, New York, Denver, Chicago? Why is FEMA just paying for El Paso's intake center, which is about a $1.2 million a month, I think they said, to run? And one of, you know, what was interesting to me was that, I think we got DocGo here, which we all had bad issues with them, bad actors, like Steve Newhouse said, trying to find out who you're dealing with, what languages, where they were in the process. My main takeaway is that we're wasting time. They come to New York City, we're doing the same thing everyone else has done three times over. We're vetting them, we're giving them shots, we're doing background checks on them. That could all be sped up. And, you know, and one of the things too is that, hey, New York City's overcrowded. Other places are. Our shelters are overcrowded. Hey, you know, at some point, New York State has to stand up and go, hey, we got 100 beds available. Send us 100. And when we get them in housing, then we'll give you another 100. And every state should do that. It should be a coordinated effort across the federal government to address this issue, not left to the states fending for themselves, because their people, not cattle. And like Steve Newhouse said, and you, when we went to that city mission and you see them little kids playing and they want to see the Statue of Liberty, it breaks your heart. And I get every point of it. We're not saying no, shut immigration down. We're saying no, have a plan. We just got through COVID. 3 years. This country did a good job with COVID, good, bad, or indifferent. And we're leaders. Let's be the leaders and let's figure this out and do it the right way instead of playing political football with it, which I have to say to the New York State Association of Counties and NACO, we haven't played politics with this issue. We're not finger pointing. We're saying, here's what we saw. Let's fix it.
Fair enough. You two took the time to go down there, as did Mark Poloncarz, the Erie County Executive, P.J. Wendell, the Chautauqua County Executive, Anthony Pazenti, the Oneida County Executive, and Mark Henry, the Chairman of the Clinton County Legislature. Okay, so you took the time to go down there. Now what? Is this somebody else's problem? Go do your job. Obviously, this is a national government responsibility, not a county government responsibility. You're dealing with a level of government that is not doing its job.
I want Steve Newhouse to answer some of that, but I do want to say, I just saw the president of Mexico trying to tell our president of the country they need $20 billion a month and they'll keep it on their side, right? And visiting Mexico's side, which Steve was saying earlier in this conversation, Steve Newhouse and yourself, was that they're hiding people because people or money are coming into that in Mexico to get over to the United States, and the cartels kidnapping them and ransom them off, whether you're worth $500 or if you're worth $20,000. Something has to be address, and I'll let Newhouse talk
all right,
about it.
All right, so let me do this. The delegation goes down from New York. You saw it firsthand. You want to do something about this. This is what you said you want to do. Secure the border. Stop or curb border crossings. You said you want to pass immigration reform in the United States Congress. You want to ensure humane treatment. You want to the need for better coordination, communication between federal agencies. You said you want to increase funding for staffing, infrastructure, transportation, United States Marshals, United States Attorneys between Mexico and Texas and other states, more resources for transportation, helicopters, improved technology. You saw black and white cameras being used in the middle of the night, and not even the type of Ring cameras that we have on our homes across the United States. You said you want to put badges on the border. I want you to explain what that means, badges on the border. Increased pathways for legal entry, meaning more than 200 appointments on this app. Right now there's 1,200 across the whole United States border, but you want to increase the number of apps that would be available. You said FEMA should pay more for the cost of associated with asylum seekers, that there should be consequences for an illegal entry. Right now, no consequences. There were consequences a few years back, and the numbers did drop. A large amount were dropped when there was a consequence for an illegal entry. You say more consequences for an illegal entry. And also you say put New York State and New York City officials on that Texas border so that you could help steer them or educate these individuals about what life is like in New York State. County Executive, let's go to you for observations on those 11 recommendations. You didn't just go down there. You're actually calling on the federal government, the state government, the New York City's administration to actually do something about what you saw. Let me go to you for observations, and then we'll go to County Executive McCoy for closing observations.
So really what this is a call to action. We didn't go there just to get a better perspective. We went there because we're also frustrated with the lack of movement on all levels of the federal government and the response in New York to this crisis. It is one of the top three major issues in this year's presidential election. It's important, and it's hitting home. Ms. Dan McCoy's got homeless migrants in his county. I have some in mine. They're spread out around the state. We had a double homicide on April 1st in the city of Middletown from the asylum seekers. We didn't even know were here. The mayor of Middletown didn't know they were here. They were renting apartments, seven men, and one of them killed two of them. And the federal judge now was saying, oh, I got to deport these people. Two of them were dead, and the other one is now being charged with murder. That's how backwards the system is. So I think from having very tough dialogue between the three of us, as well as the people that came with us, we put all our information together in a letter that was signed by Dan McCoy and myself, representing the two different organizations, representing all of New York State counties. And I actually had a conversation with Senator Schumer last week, with Congressman Pat Ryan, with Congressman Mark Molinaro, and told them that we are sending in a call to action. It is very frustrating for us to watch where you have Dan McCoy, a Democrat, and myself, a Republican. We work hand in hand, and we're able to come up with solutions. We're able to come up with things that we think can work together. Why the rest of the federal government can't put politics aside to address this real incredibly hard to deal with, but they're solution-based crisis.
County Executive McCoy.
So, you know, and I have to agree with him, Steve. It goes back to your earlier statement, both of you, that when you said we just didn't go down there for a photo op, we actually went down there to get to the heart of the problem. And when people are like, oh, I can't believe you're coming down here, the National Guard was attacked. We talked to the Texas National Guard. They happened to stay in our hotel rooms at Steve's, both of you know that. So Steve Newhouse and I didn't, you know, we didn't tell them we're in the military. We just talked to them about the mission, asked them how it was going and how bad that was. And what we learned from the Border Patrol is they attack certain areas like that, so then they can invade other areas because you're tied in that one sector. And the media needs to do a better job. They need to stop politicizing this. They need to go down there, understand what we went through, really get to the heat, do journalism 101, go down there, find out the issues, what's broken, what's not, and do a story. Please, just do a story, not on politics, but on how we can solve this issue and we can, you know, work together to do better immigration and take care of the people in this country. And when people, listen, I don't recommend to anyone, you know, Mexico is having a lot of issues with the cartel right now. We learned a lot more that was eye-opening to us. But we walked over there that night and the people from El Paso government, the people that live there wanted us to go over and say, look, we used to come over here all the time. Our borders were open. We went over there and we ate dinner. We had drinks, came back and forth. And we walked over that night and we went over and got something to eat. And, you know, listen, we had the right people with us. But again, you know, saying that, yes, you got to be careful because there are issues going on in Mexico and the U.S. side. But again, we you know, look, it's not where you can't say it's dangerous and you can't go. There's people that live there. 700,000 people live in El Paso. You got Fort Bliss, one of the bigger military bases in the U.S., station right there. So please don't sit there and say it's so unsafe for the people and everything else. They're dealing with it. The people that one sector 50 or 46 we went to, what was that town, guys? A mile from the border, and they get overrun every night. Every night they got to worry about people running through their house, stealing their cars, trying to break in their houses. I mean, we have to take care of our people here. And what I'll say is this has to be handled like we do any other national disaster across this country. If you got floods or if you got hurricanes or you got wildfires going on, evacuation or whatever reason, we do a good job at that. And that's the way we need to treat this right now. Get our hands wrapped around it, put the politics aside, and let's take care of people on both sides of the border.
You know, when we were at the point of entry, county executives, we saw right in front of us individuals carrying drugs right in front of us. There were thousands crossing the bridge into the point of entry. Again, strip searched or searched in various ways. Drug traffic is still a very prevalent issue between the borders of Mexico and the United States. We're seeing tremendous deaths following up on the opioid crisis that was occurring and is occurring in the United States right now. And in particular in New York, we're seeing fentanyl on our streets and people dying every day in the United States from fentanyl. Any observations about what you might have saw or heard about on this visit about those issues?
You know, one of the things we saw is that universally, everybody needs help, more support, the Border Patrol, the customs agents. But at that one point of entry, thousands of cars are coming into the United States every day from Mexico. Not every one of them, by far, only a small percentage is actually getting what you would think as like an X-ray scan, where you can actually scan the entire vehicle. You can find smuggled people. You can also find the drugs. While we were there, one vehicle was caught with 25 pounds of fentanyl. And then you're talking to county leaders across New York State, across America, that are dealing with a fentanyl crisis, killing people on a daily basis. And it's Now, this was apprehended because it was just a smart customs agent had that car flagged over to get the x-ray. Most of them don't get that. Overwhelming majority of those cars are free flowing. So the amount of loss and actually risk of it coming through just shows you why it continues to pour in and continues to feed this horrific deaths that we see across our country.
Well, let me just remind our listeners that hundreds of people die every day from fentanyl, and it only takes 2 milligrams of fentanyl to be lethal. And we just heard from County Executive Newhouse talking about a 25-pound seizure of fentanyl being apprehended at that border. Gentlemen, thank you again for your time, and more importantly, for paying attention to this and bringing these issues to New York County officials. And again, I'd like to thank the National Association of Counties, Matthew Chase, for organizing this trip with the NACO Immigration Task Force. I'll say that there were other states on this trip as well. In addition to New York, the state of Colorado, Washington, North Carolina, Texas, California, and Arizona. County officials from those states attended this event. This was a very important and significant meeting, and I greatly appreciate the two of you taking time and not only just going down there, but actually trying to do something about this. And I just want to just go to closing comments for you all now. If you could just take a minute each. Daniel, we'll go to you for closing comments, and then the County Executive Newhouse.
Steve, thank you. I really want to highlight another thing. It was what Newhouse brought up, and Steve Aquario. I got two Steves, so I feel like I keep saying your two last names that really stood out to me. Is what we were saying, 5 years before they get in front of a judge, 5 years, okay? I run an immigration office, and I have for the last 9 years in my county, 13 counties. I represent every county going up to the Canadian border, Champlain and all that area in Clinton County. And I have people trying to come here legally. It takes them 13 years to come here legally, 10 to 13 years. So the fact that these people walk in and they get to stay here for 5 years, we got all these retired judges across this great country. They want to keep working. 70s the new 50, right? So they want to keep working. Let's employ retired judges, law clerks, whoever, put them down in the border and these intakes. Teach them immigration law, and they decide right there whether they come in or they get sent back and they got to meet certain requirements to come back. That will slow some of the process up. That will make it legal, and that will take care of it better. And I just hope the federal government does something sooner than later.
County Executive Newhouse, closing comments, observations on your trip, your letter on behalf of the county executives.
It's interesting, over the last few weeks since we've been back, every time I get a chance to address the public, I bring up our visit to the border. This morning, to a group of engineers, County Exec McCoy was with me. This afternoon, I just spoke to the business community, and all the Hudson Valley County Execs were there with me. People need to know what's going on. People need to know that it's a crisis. People need to know that people are suffering. People need to know that the United States is being put at risk. And people also need to know that there are solutions. It's not just political and partisan rhetoric that you see on TV. There are ways, and there's some simple things that can make things better immediately. There's some other ones that take a little bit more time and are a little bit more challenging. But I think that our letter offers solutions, not rhetoric, to one of the biggest crises that we're dealing with right now in our lifetime.
Well, again, New York County officials leading the way, providing thoughtful solutions to what is a very serious national problem. I want to thank our guests today. Again, Daniel McCoy from Albany County, Steve Newhouse from Orange County. This will conclude County Conversations. I'm your host, Stephen Aquario. Have a wonderful day, and thank you for listening.
Thank you for tuning in to this episode of County Conversations, a podcast brought to you by the New York State Association of Counties. Local government is at the heart of New York State, and NYSAC is proud to present this podcast as the unified voice of county government. We appreciate your time and attention and encourage you to subscribe to stay up to date.